Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and senior market analyst here at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar Eltaray, our U.S. Director of Research, and together we will share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. Looks like we've got a lot on the podcast. What are we covering today?
Certainly. So we wanted to do a special episode to share a bit about what we do each quarter, which is listen in on REIT earnings calls. So currently publicly traded real estate investment trusts, or REITs, like most other publicly traded firms in the U.S., are providing their quarterly updates to investors and to the market, sharing their Q1 2024 results. And while we're not sell-side analysts publishing detailed company reports or recommendations, we still choose to tune in each quarter to listen to these calls because we find the commentary and insights that these companies and their management teams share to be really valuable. They highlight key trends and real themes that impact various real estate sectors. As of recording this morning on April 30th, just about 25% of the near 200 publicly traded REITs in the U.S. have reported their Q1 2024 results. And really, over the next week, the remaining 75% of the REITs will be reporting their results and hosting their earnings calls. We'll be tuning in and listening in on many of these, but really wanted to share a few of the notable items that we've heard from those that have already reported. We'll go sector by sector, calling out a few of the items and key takeaways that we took note of on each of these company calls.
Well, that sounds excellent. Do you have a particular sector you want to start with?
Sure. Let's start with the ever-hot industrial sector. Rexford Industrial Realty reported a minor beat. So overall, it was a beat, but not by too big of a margin. They did miss their consensus estimates in terms of revenue for the quarter, but they made it up with better than expected EBITDA and net income. On the call, there was really a lot of focus on the recently announced transaction with Blackstone, in which Rexford paid approximately $1 billion for 48 properties covering around 3 million square feet of high-quality warehouse products within premier LA and Orange County submarkets. And ultimately, Rexford paid an average of $332 per square foot. And the deal had a reported initial unlevered stabilized yield of 4.7%. The addition of this portfolio is very much in line with Rexford's existing portfolio of infill industrial product throughout Southern California. The Rexford management team noted that they maintain their 2024 cash same property NOI guidance, which is projected to be in the range of 7 to 8%, while they increased their net effective 2024 same property NOI guidance to be between 4.25 and 5.25%. That's effectively moving their guidance up from the previous range, which was 4 to 5%. And they attributed this shift in guidance upward to really a strong level of early renewal activity that they've seen thus far this year, which ultimately, as those renewals come online and they're able to capture that business, they're then able to increase the straight line rental revenue guidance going forward. And they did not change their guidance at all around occupancy, which they expect to be between 96.5% and 97% on average for the year. I also took note of a comment that they expect increased disposition activity this year, which they've already started on, noting that they have approximately $50 million of dispositions either under contract or with accepted offers. And one deal that they highlighted on the call has an in-place cap rate of 4.2%. A lot of transaction nuggets coming out of that call.
Yeah, I paid attention to Prologis's call, and there are a lot of kind of similar but different themes here. And so I wanted to call out a couple of things. But, you know, Prologis is a big warehouse and logistics REIT, much like Rexford, but international as opposed to just in the Southern California market. But Southern California was called out a couple of times during this call, among other topics. But Prologis' earnings call for the first quarter, they were a beat on earnings, but a minor miss on revenue. They did have what was considered a relatively strong quarter. Their funds from operation were in line with analyst expectations. They ended their quarter with 97% occupancy, very similar figures there to Rexford. They raised about $5 billion this quarter. They had a weighted average rate of 4.7% and a term of 10 years. They did begin more than $270 million in new construction in the first quarter, which I think is an interesting bright spot there. You haven't heard of a lot of development getting started in the industrial space for some time. And that puts their total development portfolio up to $7.5 billion, which is just incredible. They have also continued to expand their energy business. It's been a hot topic for them over the last few years. They've taken advantage of all of this roof space that they have on some of their larger buildings to put solar. And so this is something that they've continued to do across their owned portfolio. So there are a couple of interesting nuggets from this call, too. Their executives are pleased with some of the kind of long-term underlying economic metrics, right? Low unemployment. They mentioned strong retail sales a bit, which we'll get to later in the call. But I would say that they did mention that they have some caution surrounding Southern California's market. They are seeing some corrections in market rents, but this isn't having a huge impact on their overall portfolio. They're making this up with major rent growth in their international portfolio in Europe and Latin America. They did see leasing activity and absorption below expectations in the first quarter, and they made a big splash in the news for revising expectations for the year, showing a period of below forecast occupancy. So a lot of interesting nuggets there. I don't know if you had any thoughts you wanted to share.
Those are excellent examples of, even though they're different companies operating in different markets, the sector trends do seem to be coming through there. But shifting attention to office, I did listen in on Highwoods property call, and Highwoods Properties is a fully integrated office REIT headquartered in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it has a portfolio of properties located primarily in Atlanta, Charlotte, Dallas, Nashville, Orlando, Raleigh, Richmond, and Tampa. It's really, I would say, definitely covers that Southeast quite well. They reported Q1 results on April 24th. And while the company missed on FFO estimates, it did beat analyst expectations on revenue and earnings per share, or EPS. Highlights from the quarter and noted on the call included signing more than 900,000 square feet of second-generation leases, including over 400,000 square feet of new leases and 36,000 square feet of net expansions, as well as selling nearly 80 million of non-core properties in Raleigh. So while occupancy across the portfolio dipped modestly to 88.5%, management noted that, contrary to popular opinion, and I'm sure a lot of headlines, they continue to see strong demand across their portfolio for both new trophy assets as well as well-located non-trophy, or they refer to them as second-gen properties, both in urban and suburban submarkets. However, they also mentioned that they don't expect to announce any new development projects during the year, something, again, I don't think really unique to them. And their management team attributed this to really the difficulty for new office starts to pencil in the current capital environment, as well as still elevated hard costs. Speaking to the office leasing environment, management noted that a couple of years ago, many companies that were occupiers were kicking the can and doing short-term renewals, you know, as we were coming out of the pandemic initially. But they're not seeing that happen as much anymore. Not only do landlords not want them, many more companies, or the occupiers or the tenants, are making their return to work decisions, either choosing to stay at their current buildings or moving out or downsizing, right? They're actually making those decisions. And a final note and highlight from this call is when management, they spoke about investment transaction timelines, they noted that it's definitely taking longer to get deals done. They mentioned that deals are taking 2 to 3 quarters to get done and are increasingly involving not just corporate real estate departments, but all the way up to CEOs, really to make the decisions and that investment in the firm, whether they're going to be there or whether it's also an investment decision in terms of leasing or also on the transaction side. And that's something that they noted as really being a break from the historical norm. And I know that you listened in on a few office calls. Who'd you listen to and what were you hearing?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually going to shift the order that I discuss these in because Cousins Properties is quite a similar company to Highwoods in the geographies that they operate in, the type of office they have. And so that was a call that was really interesting to me. They're an Atlanta-based owner of these, what they call lifestyle office properties. They're heavily like amenitized and flexible office spaces, a lot of like self-contained properties that also have some retail and other leasable spaces. So really kind of an interesting business model. Their Q1 earnings, though, were kind of a big miss on earnings relative to analyst expectations, but they did beat on revenue. They did mention on the call that they leased about 400,000 square feet during the quarter, and many of those were actually expansions. This was the largest fraction of leasing that was from expansions since 2020. And so they saw a 6.6% same property NOI growth. And they noted that there was some sustained demand for these, quote, lifestyle office. And like you mentioned with the Highwoods call, a notable shift in the sort of decision making for the return to office in their core markets. They mentioned Atlanta specifically. They cited a JLL report that I think we've mentioned on the podcast before that most office vacancies are concentrated in a particular subset of buildings. And they were hopeful that their portfolio will be on the correct side of a lot of these secular trends, right? Population shifts, corporate relocations. Atlanta has been a hotspot for these for some time. Cousins has a favorable lease expiration profile. They do not see too many large expirations through 2025. And they mentioned that they are among the lowest the percentage of their lease expirations in the sector, or at least that happened before 2025. They did see positive re-leasing trends, which is actually something I'll mention on another couple of these calls that I paid attention to. And one of their strongest businesses recently has been parking. So among other things, they own a few parking garages, but they also lease out spaces at their office properties in suburban markets to other occupiers. They said that one of their strongest businesses recently has been parking. So pre-COVID, this made up about 7 to 8% of their total revenue. And since their composition of their portfolio has changed significantly, it now sits at about 6%, but they do expect that to grow up closer to their historical norm of around 8%. I think some very similar themes in that call to what you saw in the Highwoods one. Again, similar geographies, similar type of properties. I'm not surprised to see some of those trends converging from those calls. One other that I did pay attention to was Empire State Realty Trust. I know we've covered that one on the podcast before. So Empire State Realty is a New York-focused diversified REIT. So among other things, they own office and retail, but a big portion of their revenue is actually from the observatory that's atop the Empire State Building. So that's why they're a diversified REIT as opposed to just primarily being office. But I've lumped them in here because this gives a good idea of some of the trends we're seeing in the New York market. This was a slight beat on both earnings and revenue in quarter one. This was their 9th consecutive quarter of growth. They did see positive leasing spreads and positive absorption, like was mentioned on a couple of these others. They signed more than 250,000 square feet in new leases in quarter one, and they have more than 200,000 in negotiation, which is the most in their pipeline in some time. So 68,000 of the space that they leased in quarter one was actually retail, a Burlington Coat Factory location here in Midtown Manhattan, not far from our office for Altus here. And they did cite that they have a resilient performance at the Empire State Building Observatory, despite significant weather disruptions during the quarter. So this was a pretty amazing stat. Their NOI was up 13% year over year. And that was continued growth, mainly in international tourism, returning to the historic norm here in New York. And this was also aided in part by the fact that Easter fell in March. They had a significant boost over that particular weekend, which may have shifted the numbers a bit around from a year ago. There were some other good nuggets from this call. They secured a $715 million credit facility, and they've extended their debt maturities well beyond what they considered to be the kind of current market uncertainty. And they also hit a milestone that was that they've invested more than $1 billion since their 2013 IPO in upgrading space, mainly here in New York. They continue to optimize their portfolio. They're disposing of most, if not all, of their non-New York assets. They had a few of what they consider non-core assets in Westchester County here in New York and in Connecticut, close to the city. But this was a bright call. I was a little bit surprised. They've had some difficult quarters, but I would think a decent sign of some of the positive trends that are happening here in the New York area. Omar, I know you focused on one somewhat adjacent office earnings call. What do you want to share with us on that one?
Sure. So on April 23rd, Alexandria Real Estate Equities, which is the longest running life science REIT that has nearly 73.5 million square of life science space throughout the U.S., reported their results. And the REIT's Q1 results beat analyst expectations. They reported a 7.6% year-on-year NOI growth rate, as well as a 7.3% year-on-year growth rate for their FFO, as well as a 5% dividend increase. The company is really in the midst of a capital recycling initiative, disposing of non-core assets and reinvesting in core assets. And during the first quarter, the REIT disposed of approximately $275 million of non-core assets, which puts them about 20% of the way through their targeted $1.4 billion of recycling capital for 2024. In terms of leasing and supply for the life science market, management provided some comments and expressed their beliefs that the bottom or the nadir of demand was really reached during the first half of 2023. And so demand's continuing to recover, albeit incrementally. However, they also did note that the lack of financing will continue really to be an overhang to the life science market recovery for at least one to two more quarters. And they called out another headwind for the sector, which was they expect 2024 to be a peak year for new deliveries. And while we haven't seen that peak quite yet, they do expect new deliveries to really start cooling down through 2025. And while tenant improvements and non-revenue generating expenses are elevated, the company's rent collections do remain quite high. It's almost like a Purell statistic of 99.9%. I know life sciences is not quite office, but we're trying to group some of these into the broader categories. And I know that you're our in-house retail expert, so I know you tuned into a number of calls there. What were you hearing?
Our longtime listeners will probably know that I love talking about the retail sector. And I did want to recall a stat that we pulled up on a recent call, and that's we got the retail sales data back on April 15th. And this just was a stat that kind of shed some light on how much of a bright spot the sector has been in the general realm of consumer spending. And so the data showed a 0.7% increase month over month and a 1.1% increase year over year for retail spending. And so they also revised the February data. This is a U.S. Census Bureau statistic. And they revised that to show 0.9% month over month increase, up from 0.6. So some really good numbers coming out of retail spending. Economists polled at the Wall Street Journal did say they anticipated a 0.3% increase. And so this was quite above for that March figure. But there was some good stuff that came out of these calls. I paid attention to a few of them. I know you did as well. The first one I've actually not paid attention to before. This is Retail Opportunities Investments. They were a huge beat on earnings and revenue. They mentioned that they had a strong start to the year. They saw sustained demand for anchor spaces in their centers, namely among grocery anchors. Rental rates for many of those grocery spaces, they said, were more than double the previous rent. So amazing re-leasing spread there for some of their properties. They did make one acquisition. This was a grocery anchored center in the San Diego area. And they are in the process of disposing of two centers, but ultimately plan to immediately reinvest the proceeds directly into another grocery anchored center. Didn't mention where that might be, but they have been eyeing the Southern California markets. ROIC did see a 5.7% increase in same center NOI. This was well above even internal forecasts, and they have extremely low vacancy and very attractive re-leasing spreads, like I mentioned. I think you put these data points together, you see what's happening with some of these individual retail REITs and just how elevated and growing retail spending is. I'm not surprised to see some of these good numbers. I know you paid attention to a couple. What did you see in the retail space?
Sure. I tuned in for Essential Properties Realty Trust call. They reported on April 25th. With a solid beat really across all key metrics, including revenue, EBITDA, net income, and FFO. And just for some background, Essential Properties acquires, owns, manages single-tenant properties in the U.S., and it has approximately 1,400 properties under management that it is leasing to middle-market companies, which really run the gamut of everything that could be retail, whether it's restaurants, car washes, auto services, convenience stores, entertainment, health, fitness, and so many more, right? And while it's not quite the most traditional retail REIT, given its focus on single tenant, it is something that, based on their portfolio and the exposure to the U.S. consumer and businesses that are so dependent on the U.S. consumer, I thought that it was a good one to include here. It is, their management did note that while there's been growing concern around the health of the U.S. consumer, particularly on the lower end of the income or wealth spectrum, they really hasn't seen too much of that concern materialize in the form of losses or lower rents or slower business. But that's partially because their portfolio is not as exposed to that lower end spectrum. And there has been certain areas were called out on the call, specifically casual dining, where there has been relatively flat growth for the casual dining business. However, from the REIT's perspective, they're still seeing positive growth and they're still able to capture positive growth from the casual dining businesses that are ultimately filling their space. Separately, management did note that capital costs have been challenging, but they continue to see competitive financing available, at least to them, even in this higher for longer environment. And finally, the management team noted that the investment market is not, quote, devoid of competition, but certainly is at a lower level than we've seen in past years, unquote. I thought that was one of the better kind of headline quotes that came from the team. Passing it back to you. What else did you hear?
Yeah, the other call that I listened to was Phillips Edison. So this is, again, not one that I've listened to in the past, but they are, again, a retail REIT focused on centers near what they say are high suburban daytime population. So big concentrations of the remote workforce, high income areas. And this, as you can imagine, is a strategy that's really paid off in recent years. They did miss on earnings per share very slightly, but they beat on revenue. They saw their same center NOI up 3.7%. Their overall occupancy sits at around 97%. And I thought this was interesting. Anchor occupancy is even higher at 98.4%. They have rather strong pricing power for any of those tenants that want to be near their grocery anchors or any of their big anchors. They achieved a record rent spread for inline tenants at 37.4%. And they have seen increased demand from high traffic retailers like those grocery anchors. They did acquire two new centers in the first quarter. They have announced plans to make up to $250 million in additional acquisitions during the year. They said that their balance sheet is fairly strong. They have $570 million in cash and no significant maturities until 2025. So similar themes to what we've mentioned to some of these other retail calls, they've been in a fairly good position, but you did see some weak spots with their earnings miss. But I think having captured that market of these high suburban daytime population centers has really been a good niche for them. And so, Omar, I know you paid attention to one more Agree Realty's call. You want to tell us a little bit about that one?
Sure. So reporting on April 24th, Agree Realty, which owns and operates just over 2,000 properties or 44.2 million square feet of net leased retail space across the U.S., they beat on revenue expectations, but missed on their bottom line in FFO for the first quarter. However, during the quarter, the company had some notable transaction highlights, including the opportunistic disposition of six properties, which sold for gross proceeds of close to $22 million at a weighted average cap rate of 6.2%. Additionally, the REIT acquired approximately $124 million of high-quality retail net lease assets through the quarter at a weighted average cap rate of 7.7%. Management also spoke to the hesitancy or lack of need in the market for sales, part of which is driven by sellers' hope for interest rate cuts, which they noted were initially, and this is something everybody's paying attention to, but were initially expecting around March, then they were expecting around June, and now they're pushing that out to around September. And despite the dearth of transaction activity, the management team at Agree noted that they did see a disproportionate amount of 1031 activity in Florida, which I thought that was maybe that's not the biggest news, but I thought that was an interesting nugget that they were seeing a pickup of 1031 activity in the Sunshine State. Do you want to flip over to multifamily and kick that sector off?
Sure. The multifamily sector has been talked about a lot this year. I think that particularly with all of the new supply that's coming online, you're getting some interesting nuggets in these earnings calls, trying to figure out where the market is going. But one of the ones that I paid attention to was Equity Residential. So they are a large apartment REIT focused on gateway U.S. markets. And so they have a lot of properties and most of their units in San Francisco, D.C., New York, Boston, Seattle. However, they've recently expanded into the Sun Belt markets. And so they've had a big focus recently on Dallas, Houston, and Atlanta. So this call was interesting. This was a slight miss on earnings, but a beat on revenue. They reported a fairly strong quarter one. They saw revenues rise 4.1%, and their expenses only rose 1.3%, which expenses in multifamily have been a huge topic of conversation recently. So I think this was a welcome sign from some of their executives. Their same-store NOI growth was up 5.5%. An interesting tidbit from this call, which could be a good or a bad metric, depending on how you look at it, was that they have historical low turnover rate. So they may not have super high re-leasing spreads because not a lot of these units are turning over. But this is good for them because they're not having to remarket this space. They're keeping a lot of tenants in place. They mentioned on the call, and I think this was probably the most revealing part of the call, was that they are seeing strong demand for their style of apartments. So they claim that they have very few true competitors in these gateway markets because they offer a type of product that is highly amenitized. And I think you've noticed this with the office market and multifamily now, that there's sort of an arms race for the type of amenities that you can add to these to make them have no true competitors. And so they claim that in those big markets that they really stand out and they can command high rents for their properties. So their executives mentioned that they have a positive outlook on the year. They think that the political and regulatory environment has improved a bit for them in some of their core markets, namely Seattle and San Francisco, whether that be reductions in crime or incentives in both places for new construction in some of the spots that they'd like to be in. So I thought that was quite interesting. I haven't heard too many calls be rather bullish on either of those markets for multifamily or for office, but I think that this was a neat one to tune into. I was interested to hear some of that commentary about their overall feelings on the environment. I know that you paid attention to a really big one. That's Avalon Bay. What did you learn on that?
Yeah, so Avalon Bay Communities, they reported on April 26th. And for listeners not familiar with the REIT, It's a multifamily REIT with a portfolio of nearly 300 properties that cover over 90,000 units across 12 states and the District of Columbia. They reported better than expected results for Q1. On the call, management highlighted that they saw same-store residential rent revenue up 4.2% on a year-on-year basis, which is up 90 basis points from where expectations were, and built occupancy earlier than expected through the quarter. Combined with the improvements in bad debt that they really saw through the back half of the first quarter, management has increased their full year 2024 guidance on these rather strong fundamentals. And just for context, we're starting really to enter that peak leasing season, which I think that's the strong fundamentals plus entering the peak leasing season, I think, is an opportunity to build positive momentum. They did note that the East Coast regions delivered the strongest rent change in the first quarter at 2.7%, with the East Coast established regions, so think of the larger MSAs, really trending higher at closer to 3% across multifamily markets, and management highlighted this. So they called out the Sunbelt markets and noted that deliveries of new units are expected to be 3.8% of existing stock through 2024. That's well above historical averages, which combined with the 12 to 18 month that it takes for lease up at a typical project, they expect pressure on rents and occupancy in the Sunbelt markets to really last through end of 2025 and potentially into 2026. Management also noted that the softening operating fundamentals in the Sunbelt really are starting to weigh on asset values in those markets. But there's a silver lining to that, because they noted that creates really an opportunity to acquire below replacement costs. So the low supply and high cost of buying a home also helped contribute to only 7% of the company's residents moving out of one of their communities to purchase a home during the first quarter. And while I think it's an interesting stat by itself, it is shockingly off from the long-term average of 16 to 17%. So I thought that was a great little nugget that I know we've highlighted a lot on this call around the costliness, right, of buying a home coupled with the lack of supply in the single family market. And that's really coming through in AvalonBay's numbers. And then I wanted to throw in one final multifamily adjacent call that I listened to, and that's CubeSmart. So CubeSmart's one of the largest self-storage owner /operators. They reported Q1 results on April 26th, and their Q1 results were generally in line with expectations. Same-store metrics on a year-on-year basis included really flat revenues, occupancy down about 130 basis points, operating expenses up about 5%, and those higher expenses are really driven by property insurance, which they called out on their earnings call. Taken together, the same store NOI was down 1.9% for the quarter. And more urban-oriented markets such as New York, Chicago, and Boston did experience positive rent growth year on year. Sunbelt markets, again, were such as Atlanta and really many of the major markets in Florida experienced a decline in rentals year on year. Management also noted that supply concerns were impacting Northern Virginia and Nashville, but they did note that these seem to be bottoming out and these markets are starting to show the early signs of stabilization. And with the peak home buying and moving season really kicking off, and that's something we mentioned came up on a number of calls, management does expect to see their busy season through May, June, and July, though these are going to be really kind of like critical months and really good indicators of how the rest of the year should turn out. So CubeSmart management team also noted that customer retention and renewals are coming down, but remain 300 to 500 basis points above historical averages. And so to put that in context, they're currently seeing over the last quarter has been about 60% renewal of the first term leases rolling to the second year, and then that dropping off another roughly 20% going into that third year. However, management did provide a few interesting nuggets regarding transaction activity from their conversations with brokers, right? So now, I hate to admit, but this is me listening to an earnings call about the management team talking with brokers, right? So that's playing a little bit of a telephone game here. But in the past, the management team noted that they would expect that 80 to 85% of deals that would cross a broker's desk would ultimately trade. However, today, they expect that maybe 25 to 30%, or really only about a third of the historical numbers that they cited, are actually trading. I know that's a tricky stat to think about, but if we're roughly down a third, right? So we've done a number of analyses on total transaction volume, and I would say that that's pretty much right in line with what the broader data is showing across CRE sectors, not only just the self-storage sector. But I thought that was a interesting call. Not all positive, but I think it's all real. And so, Cole, I wasn't sure. I know that you listened to many other calls, but are there any that you want to highlight before we close out?
Sure. We'll shift gears a little bit here to talk about a slightly different type of call, but I paid attention to one mortgage REIT earnings call. And these are slightly different in that instead of purchasing properties, they issue debt. I paid attention to AGNC Investments call. This is a Bethesda, Maryland-based mortgage REIT. And this was quite revealing. They saw a slight beat on earnings relative to expectations, but a huge miss on revenue, which I think is probably not too much of a surprise. They did see a return of 5.7% in quarter one. This was propelled by a dividend distribution and appreciation in their book value. They benefited in the first quarter from what they believe to be a consensus at the Federal Reserve around a plateau of interest rates at their current level, even if they're not going to come down for some time. They made some operational adjustments based on that assumption and that they'll be cut later in the year. This was not as rosy of a call as others, like I mentioned, but I did want to call out a few green shoots in the debt space. They did experience a decrease in interest rate volatility in the first quarter, and they say that this helped create a more favorable environment for their MBS or mortgage-backed security investments. So the spread on their lower valued securities widened 10 basis points. And it widened 5 to 10 basis points on higher valued securities. So their executives at the end of this call, I think, mentioned something particularly interesting, and that was that they believe that heightened uncertainty surrounding geopolitical risk and inflation is, they believe it to be short-lived. We'll see whether or not that's true, but I thought that this was an interesting call to pay attention to kind of, you know, get a window into the debt space in the public markets, not just the equity side. But a few interesting nuggets there, a bit different than the others, but there were a few green shoots in that call. But Omar, I know that we've got a couple other things coming up. I do want to mention to listeners, like you mentioned at the top of the call, that we have quite a few more earnings calls for REITs this week. And so by the time we'll release this podcast, there will be some out on May 1st. That's Stag Industrial, Tanger Outlet Malls, Boston Properties, WP Carey, Kite Realty, and Extra Space Storage. On May 2nd, Kimco, Mid-America Apartments, Federal Realty, and Lamar Advertising will have their earnings call. And then on the 3rd, we have a couple brokerages, CBRE and Newmark. And then one REIT that's worth paying attention to is Regency Centers. It's also on the 3rd. Do you want to run through some of the macro updates we'll get this week?
Sure. I think it's a big week for the Fed. We have a FOMC rate decision, which I'm sure everybody's focused on. And then on the same May 1st, right? So that's tomorrow, or I guess earlier this week, when by the time you're listening to this, there'll be some employment data. So we get ADP employment numbers as well as the JOLTS survey. And then on May 2nd, we have factory orders, the trade balance, and some labor data on labor costs and productivity. And then finally this week, we'll get more payroll data as well as unemployment numbers and the ISM manufacturing index.
And I know we have some exciting stuff coming up. Do you want to plug one of our upcoming podcasts?
Sure. And it's right in theme with today's call focused on REITs. We have an exciting guest episode coming up in the next few weeks with Ed Pierzak, who is SVP of Research at NAREIT, who will be discussing developments in the REIT market. And so very excited to tune in and hear from Ed.
Yeah, and I know that he focuses on the broader sector as opposed to the zoom-ins on individual earnings calls. So I'm excited to discuss some of that with him. So I encourage our listeners to look out for that. But Omar, I think that's all the time we've got today. And I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.